Hello there, and welcome to Gilded in Blood, the Horror Lit Podcast. My name is Kevin, and it is time for yet another Short Shock. Today, we're going to talk about Clive Barker's story, Dread. Now, those of you who are horror fans, you will have heard the name Clive Barker before, I'm utterly sure, and we are going to save his story, stuff about him as an author, for when we cover one of his novels, which is certainly going to happen. I know for a fact one of his novels is in the 100 best books, so we're going to cover it as a horror's best book episode eventually. So we'll leave his history and his story for that episode today. We're just going to dive into this story. Now, Clive Barker really gained notoriety from a collection of books called The Books of Blood, of which there are 6 volumes, but the first 3 volumes are the ones that everybody really knows. So obviously, I got this book out of Books of Blood, Volumes 1 to 3. If, as a horror fan, you do not have all 6 of these volumes on your shelf, you're doing yourself a disservice. Go out, get all 6 of these, read some of the best, most gritty, most disturbing short stories of all time by one of the true masters of the genre. But today we're going to talk about Dread, so let's go ahead and get into it. Now, Dread, the title itself, calls up a lot of horror philosophy, is the term I'm going to go ahead and stamp on that. Dread is obviously another word for fear, and fear is kind of the bread and butter of the horror story, and fear is something that H.P. Lovecraft really talked about, one of the most important quotes on fear of all time. The oldest and strongest emotion of man is fear, and the oldest and strongest kind of fear is fear of the unknown. So that gets called up when we even see the title of this short story, Dread. So dread is one of the most universal emotions, but it is also something we can't help but fixate on. Our fears, our worries, our dreads, those are things that laser focus our mind onto them, and it's difficult to kind of wrest our attention away from them. And really, that's what this story is all about. Some people, one person especially, who can't help but fixate on fear, on dread itself. And that man's name is Quaid. He and the main character of the story, Stephen, meet at a college, and they're taking some philosophy courses, and they get together, and it is very clear that Quaid does not feel that these philosophy courses are going far enough, especially on the topic of dread, of fear. Quaid feels that if we don't confront or discuss our fears, those fears will overcome us, and he feels that the classes are not really doing enough to take that mantle on. So when he and Stephen get together and start talking about this, Quaid reveals to Stephen that he very much wants to take this a little bit farther and a little bit different of a direction. And there is a weird dynamic between them immediately, because Stephen is younger than Quaid, and that age gap creates a dynamic ripe for corruption. It's almost a follower slash cult leader situation. And that really informs a lot of what happens throughout the rest of the story. Quaid also believes that dread exists pre-personality, that we come into the world with our fears already intact, that they're not really created much by anything else, that they already come prepackaged, that we are already predisposed to find some things dreadful. And whether he succeeds in proving that or not, that's really secondary to how he tries to prove that theory that we're going to get into. Now, into this dynamic of these two people comes a female, Cheryl. And Quaid welcomes her into this little trio because he finds out that she is a staunch vegetarian and she does not like meat at all. She hates and abhors the thought of meat. It makes her physically ill. So we kind of know where this is headed, though even when it happens, we're maybe taken a little bit aback at exactly how far Quaid is willing to go to kind of prove his thesis on dread, on fear. Now, very quickly after Cheryl comes on the scene here, she and Quaid start dating, slightly predictably, and then Steven is basically shunted out of the picture for a while. Quaid and Cheryl disappear from the scene. Steven can't find either of them, and it's during this point that we find out what Steven's dread is, that he is deathly afraid of deafness and isolation because of something that happened to him as a kid, some disease that took away his hearing, and the concept that if he can't hear anything, he's really not part of anything, he's not part of any group, which that isolation and deafness really scarred him as a child. But perhaps more disturbingly, we also are told that not only does he have these fears, these dreads, but in a drunken confession one night, he actually told Quaid of what this is. So a little bit of predestination, a little bit of foreboding. We know that Quaid is probably not up to something very good with Cheryl, but not quite yet do we realize how dangerous it is that Steven has told Quaid of his deepest, darkest fears. Well, soon after that, Quaid appears back, and Cheryl is still kind of not in the picture, but Quaid has revealed that he has done a bit of an experiment with Cheryl, and he invites Steven over to his house to tell him about that experiment. And Steven, perhaps stupidly, probably according to anybody reading the story, actually goes over there, and we find out what Quaid and Cheryl have been doing in this time away. So Quaid, knowing that Cheryl is deathly afraid or averse to meet, has kidnapped Cheryl, basically, and locked her in a room with a large, I can't remember what cut of meat it is, but a big, well-cooked, well-seasoned cut of meat. And that is her only food. And the door is locked, no matter how much she pounds on it, no matter how much she cries to be let out, she is ignored. She's given water, and she has this meat, and that's the only thing that she can eat. Now, we find this out because Quaid reveals to Steven that he has photographed the entire thing, that he scientifically-mindedly took regular photographs of everything that was going on, and he's showing Steven these photographs. And the fact that Quaid has photographed this experiment with Cheryl lends an already criminal situation, let's be very, very clear about this, a worse kind of air, a voyeuristic, almost pornographic air. And really what that tells the reader is that, at least to Quaid, the line between dread and arousal is very thin, and possibly not even there. And later on, it's actually said in the story, this is a quote, "There is no delight the equal of dread, as long as it's someone else's." So at this point in the story, we really see Quaid as just sort of getting off on the terror of other people. But we will find out later that there's a deeper, I wouldn't say less skeevy aspect to it, but maybe a more personal reason why Quaid is doing this. And Quaid actually justifies this treatment of Cheryl by saying, well, she knew that he wanted people to experiment on. I told her that I wanted people to experiment on, and she was like, oh, that's a good idea. Well, so why would she be surprised that I would kidnap her and lock her into a room with meat and make her face her darkest fear? So certainly there's something maybe missing from Quaid's setup mentally that really, really shouldn't be ignored. And there's a genius aspect to Quaid's experiment because, you know, Cheryl starts out by obviously being repulsed by the meat. It's perfect, it's delicious, but the longer she waits before eating it and she realizes and recognizes this is the only way out, she has to eat that meat before that door is going to get unlocked and she can leave. She has the key. She knows exactly what she needs to do, but she really doesn't want to do it. But the more she waits, that meat starts to rot, and the more disgusting the meat becomes, and the more her fear of it grows. So she is in perfect control of the level of dread that she has. The sooner she eats it, the less disgusting it's going to be. But the longer she waits because of her fear, the more she's going to fear it. So it becomes this tug and pull of, well, do I overcome my fear now or do I give into it now and then become more afraid later on? So there is a disturbing, albeit disturbing, genius to Quaid's experiment. It's this self-fulfilling kind of prophecy of an experiment, and Cheryl's really in control of it, oddly enough. And as Quaid is showing Stephen these photographs, Stephen also feels the fascination of watching someone suffer, and he's a little bit repulsed by himself, but he can't control that. And as Quaid's going through this, he's very flippant about this experiment. I mean, he's literally torturing somebody. There's really no gainsaying it. He is torturing somebody here. But he's very flippant about it. He said, well, there's no harm done. And I mean, the reader would think, well, what about kidnapping, asshole? But it really shows that Quaid is disconnected from morality and humanity almost. And that makes him dangerous. He seems to really be lacking something essential in a mental makeup that it makes him a very dangerous character, especially later on, knowing that Stephen has already let him know what he is most afraid of. Of course, the experiment ends in a way that it's going to have to. She finally gives in and eats the meat, and he is true to his word. He tells Stephen, I let her out. We sat and we talked for a while, and away she went. She hasn't come back to class, but she'll deal with it on her own. And Stephen's like, well, you're a real asshole. You're an evil son of a bitch. And Quaid's like, well, I guess we'll agree to disagree. But and he goes to get a drink, and then all of a sudden there's chloroform over Stephen's mouth, and Stephen is the next experiment. So after Quaid abducts Stephen, there is a shift of point of view from Stephen to Quaid. And it kind of goes back and forth. We do see things from Stephen's point of view, and then we also see things from Quaid's point of view. But whenever we're in Quaid's point of view, he only thinks of Stephen as the subject. He never thinks of him as his friend. He doesn't even think of him by his full name. He just thinks of him as the subject. And that really is what gives the reader the feeling that there's a strong possibility that Quaid may in fact be just a high-functioning sociopath, that for Quaid, the cracking or breaking of the mind is the goal. It's the whole point. And really, only somebody who truly lacks all empathy is capable of doing something like that. And it's at this point that Quaid, obviously the narrator is looking in on his thoughts, and Quaid thinks something that I kind of wrote down in my notes here, to me, is the best description of the point of the horror genre that I've ever read. Quaid thinks at one point, to live another's dread vicariously was the safest, cleverest way to touch the beast. I want to read that again. I think it's important enough that I'm going to read it again. To live another's dread vicariously was the safest, cleverest way to touch the beast. I think that is that should be on the mantelpiece of every person who loves horror, because that's really what horror is all about. We watch this stuff, we read this stuff, we play this stuff in terms of a video game, and we get to vicariously experience dread and fear. And what we do when we do that, again, we can use that word catharsis, getting our own fear and our own dread out in a way that is safer, that is less damaging than having to go through it in real life. So it's not really about pleasure in watching somebody suffer. That's not really what horror is all about, though politicians and people who hate the horror genre will continue to try to hammer that home. Well, you know, only psychos love horror because they love hurting people and they love seeing people hurt. No, that's actually not the damn point. The point is, every single person on earth has something they are terrified of, something that renders them helpless in the face of. And one of the best things to do when you have something you're terrified of is to face it and to try to get rid of some of that fear of it, that dread of it. And sometimes watching that people go through that vicariously is a way to process that information. Again, No psychology degree, not even one. Didn't even do well in my psychology class, so do not take this as gospel. But this is what I've come to believe, and this is what this story espouses, is that what Quaid is actually doing this for is not for pleasure. He's not sitting there getting off on this, okay? There's not that skeevy quality to it. What he's actually doing is he's trying to watch these people face their darkest fears and try to find out how they deal with it so that he can deal with his. Because there is something very specific that he is terrified of, that he can't help but fixate on, and what he desperately wants is a way to handle that, a key out of his prison of dread. And that's why he has abducted these people, that's why he's watching, that's why there's that voyeuristic aspect of trying to find out what is going on with these people and how they are trying to deal with it. The problem is, by doing this, especially by doing this to Steven, he creates the thing that he's most terrified of. Because what he has done to Steven is he has locked him in this dark room and put a device on his head so that he cannot hear. He can't even really hear himself speak. He's absolutely deaf and absolutely isolated. And this basically breaks Steven. Because with Cheryl, there was an endpoint to the experiment. She had to eat the meat. She eats the meat, door unlocks, and out she goes. With Steven, the endpoint seems to be the loss of his mind. Quaid wants to push him absolutely to the breaking point, and Steven does. He begins to revert to this childlike state, and he literally loses his mind. We see from his point of view, Steven's point of view, when Quaid finally lets him out, and Steven sees the pictures of what Quaid is terrified of, and it seems to be axes and axe murders and, oddly enough, clowns, the grinning maniac. Not necessarily people in face paint and so on and so forth, but people who have literally lost their minds with an axe murdering people. That is the thing that Quaid is most terrified of. But like I said, it's not just the axe. He's petrified of the axe man, insane, dancing. And he lives on the top floor of this house that's kind of surrounded by all these empty houses so that he can do his experiments with no interruption, I guess you would say. And he has this recurring, terrifying nightmare of the Axeman dancing up the stairs and coming into his room in the middle of the night, coming for him. So you can probably see what happens. Steven is dropped off at a mental institution anonymously. Quaid just drops Steven off there in the front, and they institutionalize him. But Steven is able to get out. And there's this feeling of destiny as these two characters are brought back together. Quaid has this dream multiple times. Steven finds an axe and goes back to the only place he can remember being, which is, of course, the house where Quaid is. And Quaid literally turns Steven into his worst nightmare. And the end scene, to me, is classic horror. It hits that perfect shudder point where it's just so goddamn creepy, because we see from Quaid's point of view, he is laying in bed, he hears noises, he tries to write them off to something innocuous, but there's no denying after a while that somebody is coming up the stairs in the dark of night, that there is nobody around to hear him scream. And when Steven turns the corner and he has the axe and he is grinning and he is a maniac, he has lost his mind, he has no empathy, has no sense of humanity left, and he comes for him with the axe. That final scene is just breathtakingly scary. It really is. There's terror, there's horror, there's disgust, and there's dread all at once. And it's just a perfect ending to a story that, aside from being very, very disturbing and scary as hell, is a really interesting meditation on what the hell are we even doing reading this stuff. It's not that we're all sickos. I promise you, the people who are look down on you because you like to read this stuff or you like to watch this stuff, they are wrong. You are doing, honestly, something that is psychologically healthy. You are trying to work through fear. And that's what Clive Barker is talking about in this short story. but he seems to be also warning the extent to which we try to work through that fear can sometimes be a little bit too far. So, you know, don't kidnap people and drive them insane by making them face their fears. As long as you do that, I think you're going to be okay. So that is Clive Barker's Dread. I really, really hope you go check out that book of short stories, The Books of Blood, volumes one through three are the ones that everybody kind of knows, but there is a 4, 5, and 6. So read all of them. It's definitely worth your time, but Dread is one of the shining jewels of that collection. All right. Thank you so much for joining me for another Short Shock. Hopefully you also tuned in yesterday or downloaded yesterday the second part of the October 2022 bonus series, where I go over 100 horror movies that you guys should be checking out. That was a lot of fun. We're going to have that Mondays all the way through October, culminating with Halloween, the final Monday of October, where I'll go over my top 20 horror films of all time, counting down and telling you what I think is the absolute best of the best, the number one horror film, according to me. But we are also going to be getting into some more literature. Next week, we are going to have another full episode. It will be a classic Carnage episode, and we're going to go all the way back to probably the first work of Western Anglo-Saxon literature, and that would be Beowulf. I like to call it the first creature feature of all time. I think you'll really, really enjoy it. There's a lot we can talk about it. And then the week after that, 2 weeks from today, we will be talking about another Short Shock. And since that will be our final Tuesday before Halloween, I think we're going to do a Halloween-themed short story. I'm going to give you guys He'll Come Knocking at Your Door by Robert R. McCammon, an absolutely fantastic Halloween-themed short story. So be on the lookout for those. Thank you, obviously, to Swarm for the use of his music. You can find this podcast on all the platforms. But if you want to go straight to the source, you can go to gildedinblood.buzzsprout.com and download it directly from there. And until next time, stay safe and stay spooked.